This region, North Africa, Middle East, is not only a desert region where there is something happening and there is some energy transition, but this will also become a powerhouse to the world. What used to be a powerhouse for oil and gas will become in the coming decades a powerhouse for green power and also green molecules, let's say hydrogen.
Welcome to Let's Talk Change. Human history is a long series of adaptations to disruptive change. The impact of innovation and scalability of today's technologies is powerful. They either deteriorate or improve living conditions on Earth. In this podcast series, we sit down with decision makers, innovators, experts, and visionaries to discuss how technologies, business innovations, policies, and improved communication can drive the change we need to amplify sustainable behavior in business and politics for the benefit of the people and the planet.
My name is David Wortmann. Who has not heard about the idea of using the vast solar energy sources of the desert to power the world with clean energy? Paul van Zon is probably the most experienced energy manager to talk about this vision. 10 years ago, he was the first managing director of the so-called Desertec Industrial Initiative, DII, which then focused on exporting solar energy from the desert of North Africa and the Middle East to Europe. 5 years ago, DII refocused its effort to enable solar and wind projects for local energy consumption in North Africa and the Middle East. Today, DII has reinvented itself once again. And instead of exporting kilowatt hours, DII is now enabling the export of molecules from renewable energy to Europe. Hydrogen. I've talked with Paul van Zon, now president of DII, about 10 years of learnings from one of the most promising industrial initiatives the last couple of decades. What has really been achieved? What is Desertec working on today? And why he thinks the new focus on green hydrogen is important for the global energy transition. Enjoy, and please make sure you subscribe to our podcast.
We are sitting here together with Paul van Zon. He's the author of Emission-Free Energy from the Desert. And he has written this book for a very good reason, because he has been the initiator and the long-term managing director of the so-called Desertec Industrial Initiative. And this is a topic we will talk about today. So I'm very much welcoming you.
Thank you, David. It is a pleasure to be here with you and to talk actually about the subject of energy from deserts, especially the deserts in North Africa and the Middle East, which we started 10 years ago, as you know, and started not 10 years ago in the deserts, but 10 years ago in Germany, in Munich.
Before we start a deep dive into the development of the Desertec Initiative, I would like to ask you personally, how did you actually come into the position to support this initiative?
Well, actually, after my school and university in Delft in the Netherlands, where I studied electrical engineering, I worked all of my life in energy.
Yeah.
So electrical grids, electrical power generation, demand, sales, also green power, energy trading and all that. And then 10 years ago, the German industry, basically, like the Siemens and the Deutsche Bank and the E.ON and RWE, they asked me to run this project or this big thing, Desertec. And they said, well, let's try to create conditions in North Africa, Middle East for renewable energy. Basically, in those days, it was about solar thermal.
How did they come up with that idea? I mean, it is not normal that big industrial corporations together come up with an idea, and in particular 10 years ago, saying, well, let's revolutionize the energy world.
It was just after the big financial crisis. So there was a lot of depression, lack of perspectives and vision about the future. But at the same time, there were also ideas that would create perspectives. And this was ideas like people like Gerhard Knies and scientists that said, well, look at the deserts of this world where there is so much sunshine. This energy can be used for the whole world. Companies like Munich Re in Munich, Siemens, but also others, they said, well, this is also a business opportunity. So they wanted to connect this business opportunity with sustainability, with a good perspective for the future in the sense of society.
The whole idea of DESERTEC actually was born in the scientific community, I believe, with the German aerospace industry. What were the objectives of the industry to take up this idea and to follow this idea?
Well, at the very beginning, like say, it started maybe 20 and even longer time ago. As you say correctly, there was a scientific world that took this, but also some political leaders like Prince Hassan in Jordania and the King of Morocco. These kind of visionary leaders, they picked this idea up as well. And then the industry in Germany, as I said, well, recognized that this was a business opportunity. And at the very beginning, it was very much concentrated on one technology, solar thermal, this concentrated power technology.
So solar thermal is basically using the heat of the sun, heating up a liquid, and then this heated up liquid would steer a turbine, and then you would produce electricity out of that.
Exactly. Basically, the same mechanism that we know from thermal power plants like coal and gas and oil, but
just
instead of fossil, you use the sun. Yeah, the energy from the sun is just simple. That was also the reason why the energy companies say, well, hey, this can be used because we can use this as a normal power plant because you can store this energy. And this thermal energy can be stored, so you can produce day and night. So at the very beginning, this DESERTEC idea was very much focused on this single technology. But the problem with this technology was in those days that it was very expensive. So that also created a lot of tension. Of course, many say, well, this is so expensive, it needs a lot of subsidy, and why should we bring subsidy money from countries to the deserts? People were making jokes like putting this money in the sand. But it was a starting point. Companies, but also governments, especially the German government, they really thought 10 years ago, this is a good idea, let's go for it, let's try. And then we started the beginnings of building up a team, gathering a lot of industrial companies, having talks to the governments, not only the German government, of course, but especially the governments in North Africa and Middle East, and all the institutions that are around to find out like what makes sense. We teamed up with Fraunhofer Gesellschaft, for instance. They did a lot of studies to really find out what is possible, what makes sense. How can we build up a market with renewable energy?
So you looked into all technologies.
Yes, we started very narrow focus, but we soon found out that it would be much better to broaden this and to look at all technologies, not only solar thermal, also photovoltaic technology, wind technology, hydro, and also storage. And later, years later, not only electricity, but also molecules like hydrogen.
We will come to this a little later. I would like to focus on this first phase. Let's call it the first phase of DII, of DESERTEC. I think you probably could call it a big success in itself to bring all of these big corporations together. And I think back then they even made the announcement of 400 billion euros of investments. And I think this really has changed the mindset of many, many people around the globe, not just here in Europe or in the Middle East, but I think really around the globe as well, that renewables is really something serious. It's not some small photovoltaic technology, but this is really something where you can produce electricity large scale and potentially also fuel a whole region with that.
Yeah.
I think just this story was probably a big success in the beginning and helped you to gather all these great partners.
Absolutely. I think it was a historic moment that we came with this big idea that big companies, the DAX listed companies in Germany in those days, it was considered the best you can get. And they said, we are going to do this. And that's changed the world because in one day or overnight, this was something decent, feasible. So before, and there was no renewable energy in North Africa and Middle East, maybe a little bit of hydrogen, of hydropower in Egypt and some windmills, but nothing more than that. And very, very soon thereafter, these countries also were getting curious, like, is this something we can use? And as I said, some leaders in these countries, like in Morocco and in Jordan and in the UAE, they picked this up And they became aware that this was something for their future.
You have not only looked into different technologies, you also have looked into the question whether the energy should be used in the Middle East or transported through large power cables to Europe. So what was the rationale behind this and what was the conclusion at the end of the day?
Initially, the idea was very simple. Everyone thought, well, this is a great idea to bring this electricity from the deserts where nobody is living, so to say, to Europe. But first of all, there are many people living. There are hundreds of millions of people living in deserts in the North Africa, Middle East and Turkey. I think in total is about 500 million, as much as in Europe. Also, initially, the idea to bring this physical power to Europe, to be able to invest, to pay for this. But the problem was that Europe, in the last 10 years, the electrical power, there was no need. There was no shortage. The prices of electrical power were very low. So there was no rationale to transport electricity from North Africa to Europe.
In Europe, we had a pretty, let's say, stable energy market. There was no rising energy demand because the population wasn't going up. There were and still are a lot of initiatives for energy efficiency in place as well.
Yeah.
So the economic growth is not really depending on energy growth. This was and still is different to the Middle East, where you have a growing population, a growing economy. So you really have a growing need of energy, opposed to Europe, where you would have more a replacement of fossil and nuclear energy through solar. In the Middle East, it's really additional energy.
You say this correctly, that we learned more about North Africa, about the population, about their needs, the really intrinsic perspectives for these people. Actually, it is about the energy that they need, and the energy should be renewable as well to these population. And also there should be jobs, local jobs and factories. So that's what we all learned, and more our focus changed from bringing this electricity to Europe to taking care that this energy would be, in the first place, produced locally and also consumed locally. Up to the moment, maybe in the future, that this market is, first of all, at a very high percentage of renewables, so no emissions, and then would be able to export. So we more or less came in on a sort of first idea fix, the first phase. We call it now DESERTEC 1.0, 10 years ago, of bringing electricity to Europe. We moved to a better thinking of first building up local markets, making sure that the renewables become competitive, that they can be integrated in these power markets, and that the local population have a benefit. So that was also the reason that at some point in time, I think it was about so 4 or 5 years, we say, well, we should not sit in Munich with our team, but we should sit in the region, North Africa or Middle East. We moved in the beginning of 2015 from Munich to Dubai.
So we talked a lot about DESERTEC phase one, DESERTEC 1.0. What did actually mark the end of DESERTEC 1.0? You talked about beginning in 2009. You moved the office from Munich to the Middle East region, Dubai, in 2015. So what did actually mark the end of phase one? What marked the beginning of phase two? And what were the objectives of phase two?
The first phase, this objective was clear. As we said, it was very much focused on electricity for Europe. Also the industry had all ideas about that, but all our studies and the realities of the market made us move to the market themselves, the region themselves. When we started in Dubai, first of all, something very important happened in the beginning of 2015. In January 2015, the first project of solar PV became competitive in the sense of cost level below gas and coal. It was in those days in Dubai, $5.85 per kilowatt hour.
That was a global world record, right?
It was a world record for a 200 megawatt project. So that would mean that during the day, if there's sunshine, you produce at 5.8 cents.
For lower cost than coal and
exactly.
gas.
Exactly. So that already showed to everyone, like, hey, we cannot ignore this anymore. This is not a game of collecting a lot of subsidy money. At the end of the day, we do not need any subsidies if the electricity is competitive. Mm-hmm. From that moment on, we said, well, what we are going to do now is to help the market or companies or developers to overcome hurdles, practical hurdles. So from a more theoretical and from more studies like the Fraunhofer studies and all the other studies that we had, we transferred or we moved into practical
okay.
subjects. Like what are the hurdles like legislation, bureaucracy, financing problems,
permitting processes.
Yeah, and the also the capacity building, there were no staff to run projects and that kind of thing. So very practical. We are now today, actually what happened is that DEWA, the energy company in Dubai, they first tendered for 100 megawatts. They asked the market, give me your proposal for 100 megawatts. Then one of our main partners, Aqua Power from Saudi Arabia, they said to DEWA, if you allow us to double this, instead of 100, we make it 200 megawatts, then we can offer you this price of 5.8 cents because it's economy of scale. Mm-hmm. And before DEWA, for instance, a year earlier, they were not so convinced about the feasibility of PV. And that changed overnight at that moment. And there we saw that very soon other countries took this over. Morocco, Egypt, Jordan, and lately also Saudi Arabia, Oman, they picked up this reality of the market.
So, I mean, a lot of these countries are oil-producing countries. What do they actually do with this solar electricity? They use it themselves?
Well, at this moment, all countries can easily adopt or use this energy that they produce. It's not about electricity export yet. Actually, you say that most countries are oil-producing. That's not quite true anymore. I mean, there is a mix of countries that are dependent on energy, like Morocco, Tunisia, Jordan,
right,
and so on. But also countries that are oil producers or gas producers, like Qatar. So this is a mix. And each country has its own rationale, its own realities. But what we see now is that all countries recognize the benefits of solar and wind. Do not forget wind. And they are all now building solar and wind in their energy package and have very ambitious targets.
But these targets are based on the assumption that most of this energy is being consumed at home and then yes. the petroleum still can be sold somewhere else.
Yes.
Or is there, and maybe we can talk a little bit as well about the future, about what's coming up as well, is there also the idea of to turn some of these countries from gas or oil exporting countries into renewable energy exporting countries?
Of course, first of all, most countries in North Africa and Middle East have a growing demand. So any new project, this demand, or this production is immediately absorbed in the local systems. But due to the fact that these cost levels are so low, mm-hmm. today we talk not anymore about 5.8 cents, we talk about 1.7 cents, also in Dubai, another world record just recently, $1.7 per kilowatt hour.
So could you make the argument that producing and using solar energy in an oil formerly or still oil exporting country is cheaper than they use their own oil for energy?
Yes, there may be some oil like in Saudi Arabia that is so cheap at cost level to pump it up, so it still that could match with this 1.7 cents, but not long anymore. Mm-hmm. These countries understand they are, of course, in a dilemma. What are we going to do? Because we are sitting on huge amounts of reserves of oil and gas. And there may be no market anymore for that in the coming time if this goes on. But they cannot close their eyes anymore for this. They are all smart enough to know that whatever happens, they have to go into these renewables. And then to see what of their oil and gas can they still, for the coming decades, sell into the world markets. But you brought another point that is about exporting renewable energy. This Desertec 10 years ago was very much focused on exporting electricity.
Through cables, power lines.
And power lines. That will definitely also happen. We see a world movement of more integration of power grids like we see in Europe. And the Chinese are very strong in helping out with long-term plannings of connecting grids throughout the globe. So that will definitely happen because there's a lot of exchange, not only one direction exchange. So if there is some hour sunshine in area A and dark in area B, then you can produce, bring power from A to B, that kind of thing. Or if there's wind in the north and no wind in the south, you can also transfer this energy. But this power connection is not the only thing. The next thing, what we are also facing now, and we are heavily helping the industry to develop, the so-called green molecules. If this electricity from solar or wind is so cheap, only 1 cent maybe, or half a cent in a couple of years, then it's definitely also very cheap to convert this to hydrogen or to ammonia or to synthetic gases like CH4, so say natural gas, but not natural, so not synthetic gas. So this is, I think, going to happen.
So basically the old idea is now coming back, exporting renewables, but instead of exporting the electrons through power lines, you're now producing molecules. What are the benefits?
The great benefit is the storability and the transportation. The transportation cost of, say, hydrogen, if we are able to do this through pipelines and can be done through ships, these costs are a factor 6 to 10 lower than transporting electricity. So the electricity cables is a relatively expensive technology. It is still feasible to connect grids, yes, but we believe that the mainstream, the bulk of energy transportation worldwide will be through hydrogen or similar gases.
And hydrogen offers many different benefits. A power line would only, let's say, transport electrons, but hydrogen you can turn into many different products, right? I mean, we talk about power to X.
Yeah.
What are these different products?
All kinds of liquids, also for the car industry. Transportation can shift to hydrogen.
Heavy duty ships, airplanes.
Maybe for airplanes, hydrogen may not be the right way, but once you have very cheap hydrogen, you can connect carbon to it. Mm-hmm. And you can create fuels that are similar to what we know now, like kerosene.
Right.
You can make synthetic kerosene, for instance.
Right.
Power to liquids, as they call it, that has the same future because the power costs are so low and they are being produced in these desert areas. Then comes the topic which you very often hear is, but the deserts, this region is unstable, there are terrorists, there's all kinds of problems. What we think is that a lot of these problems came up due to imbalances through oil and gas industry and geopolitical consequences of this. But the pure fact that all these countries get all the sunshine, it will provide a platform throughout the whole region for production of energy. So if we are able to stimulate the production of very cheap green energy in these regions, that will then provide to all countries, not only the ones that have oil or gas, but all countries in the region, perspectives for their own population. The whole industries and the whole society will change in the sense of bottom up, like the small renewables at houses, at the whole buildings and everything, but also factories. So producing this at small scale, but also at large scale, will bring benefits to the region in the sense of jobs, local industry, low cost, stability, peace at the end of the day.
We talked about phase one of Desertec from 2009 to 2015. You moved the office to Dubai and you concentrated your activities on different renewable energies. You concentrated and focused your activities on enabling projects in the regions. What are the objectives now of Desertec 3.0, the future Desertec?
Yeah, we have seen a whole evolution. Where we stand now is that we are not only looking at production of energy. We look at the whole value chain, electricity production or conversion to green molecules, whatever
through
it is.
Through hydrogen.
Hydrogen,
yeah.
Or synthetic gases. It is about transportation, mm-hmm. not only through electrical grids, but also through gas pipes or through ships or whatever.
Yeah.
It is about storage, mm-hmm. yeah, whatever storage, electrical storage or storage on hydrogen. Or
liquids.
Liquid storage. Or
chemicals.
Or heat or cold storage,
yeah.
also very important. And it is about, and that is last but not least, I think it's the most important element is flexible demand. The demand side for historically the last 100 years has always seen as a sort of holy cow, only consuming, so passive.
It was a flat production line, more or less.
The demand side, no, the demand side had fluctuations, but it was seen as a passive, as a consumer.
Mm-hmm.
Today, we talk about the prosumer. The demand side is taking, but also giving.
Mm-hmm.
The demand side can be shifted. So this flexibility of the demand side is very important to the market. The market of the future is a market determined about the parties that can provide flexibility.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If you are able in times that there is no sunshine to overcome this in any other way, then you are the winner in the future. Flexibility of demand is the thing we are really focusing on. And then you can think of, for instance, the connection of electric vehicles or vehicles that are using hydrogen, they can produce electricity. But also desalination, so making clean water, is a process that can be shifted to the times that the energy is cheap from sunshine, for instance. So during sun hours, you produce your water, that kind of thing. So not consuming during day and night, but consuming or taking the electricity at the time that it is cheap. That is the future.
So if you say that you're looking at into the whole value chain from production, transportation, storage to all the different products which you have been mentioning, including the flexibility market, what is your role as DesertTech, as DII?
We have called ourselves a market enabler. We are paving the way for the market, and that's more now our role. There are still a lot of obstacles in the market. There is still an unawareness. But we talk about generation, about transport, about storage, about flexible demand.
So you do awareness building, you talk to important stakeholders, you talk to potential business partners, you talk to politicians and people in the administration.
Yeah, basically that's where it's needed, but very much focused on the business opportunity for our partners. It's a very simple concept. If our partners are able to build feasible solar or wind grids, mm-hmm. or storage or smart demand installations, then that will accelerate the energy transition. So we look at where are the hurdles, what's the awareness of our partners for this. And if these hurdles are unawareness in their environment, we can do something together with them.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, conferences or workshops where we bring the public and the mm-hmm. private sector together.
Mm-hmm.
But always seen from the point of view of the industrial side.
You have a very impressive list of shareholders and also associated partners. Are you still open for new partners and shareholders?
Of course. I mean, it would be lovely to have more powers from all over the world. Actually, we in 10 years' time, we shifted a little bit from the German basis that we had. A lot of these partners, sometimes they did not continue as a partner with us. But most of them could be replaced by international partners. From China, from North Africa, from Middle East, from the United States, from Japan, Korea, and so on. So, of course, this movement of DII, Desert Energy, as we call ourselves today, has now passed 10 years, but there are still decades to come.
So if you talk to a new shareholder or potential associated partner, what is the key benefit you tell them that will get joining your organization?
The most important thing for a partner is that he feels like contributing to a movement, more a general movement to create better market conditions for the partner itself, but also for the market and maybe to its competitors. The very specific benefit that he has is he can influence this. He is part of the working groups, he is in the conferences, he is part of studies that we are carrying out, and that gives him an advantage. I would say this the advantage of the better knowledge, better awareness, and also training of its own staff.
I don't know if you would like to add anything to the conversation which we have had, but I thought it was a very fruitful conversation. I think we have learned that DesertTech has really developed from phase 1.0 over phase 2.0 now into the future. There has been a lot of experience gained within your consortium, and this is now being taken further on and to the benefit of the the people to the benefit of the MENA region, but also globally in Europe. And thank you very much for this very inspiring discussion. And we will stay close to that and probably come back to you and ask some more questions in a few years.
Thank you very much, David. Yeah, it was a pleasure to be here. And I hope that we could also make clear to everyone that this region, North Africa, Middle East, it's not only a desert region where there is something happening and there is some energy transition, but this will also become a powerhouse to the world. What used to be a powerhouse for oil and gas will become in the coming decades a powerhouse for green power and also green molecules, say hydrogen and so on.
That will be a fantastic but also realistic vision to do, because we are within the process already turning this region to a green electricity and power region.
Exactly.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, David.
Thanks again for tuning in. We hope you'll join us next time on Let's Talk Change. We are proud to be powered by DWR Eco, an international clean tech consultancy for business strategies, communications, and public affairs.